The power poured out of me, leaving me a bit short of breath. The little yellow duck quivered and then lurched into motion, spinning about in an aimless circle. I nodded once, reached out a hand, and with an effort of will to support the gesture, I broke the circle. The screen vanished as quickly as it had arrived, and the little yellow duck quacked and marched toward the door. I glanced up at Susan. Her dark and lovely eyes watched the duck with what could charitably be termed extreme skepticism. I scowled at her. "Don't say it."
"I didn't say anything."
"Well, don't." She fought down a smile.
"I won't."
I opened the door. The duck waddled out into the hallway, quacked, and turned to the left. I stepped out, picked the duck up, and said, "It's close. Let's move. We just checked the duck at intersections."
"Does the duck know about stairs?"
"More or less. Come on, I don't know how long the spell will last." I led the way. I'm not the world's mightiest athlete, but I exercise a bit. I have really long legs, and I can walk faster than some run. The duck led us down a pair of long hallways to a door with an employees-only sign on it. I opened the door, peeked in, and reported in a whisper, "Big laundry room." Footsteps sounded behind us, coming down another hallway. Susan looked at me with wide eyes. I pushed into the room, Susan close behind me. I closed the door almost all the way, holding it from closing completely so that the lock wouldn't click and give us away. The footsteps came closer, a couple sets of them, and two shapes went quickly by, passing close to the cracked doorway. "Hendricks and Guard," I murmured to Susan.
"How do you know?" she whispered back.
"Smell the blonde's perfume." I counted silently to 10 and opened the door, looking out. The hallway was clear. I closed the door and turned on the lights. The room was fairly large, with several commercial washing machines ranked against one wall. A bank of dryers faced them on the opposite side of the room, and in between were several long counters that held stacks and stacks of folded white sheets and towels. I put the duck on the floor, and it waddled off down a row of counters.
This is how they had it hidden on the yacht, concealed among laundry. "And those professional thief types tend to be so predictable?" Susan asked.
I frowned and put the duck on the floor.
"Watch the door."
The duck waddled at once over to the far side of the room and bumped into some hanging laundry. I pulled the hanging sheets to one side and found a large ventilation grate behind them. I knelt down, running my fingers and eyes over the edges of the grate, and found a pair of holes where screws had been. A quick tug on the grate had it off the wall, revealing a vent maybe 3 feet square. I stuck my head in and found a ventilation shaft running between the walls. The duck waddled in and took a determined right.
"Air duct," I said.
I twisted out of the tuxedo jacket and absently ripped off the tie from around my neck. I stepped out of the clumsy shoes and rolled up my shirt sleeves, bearing my shield bracelet to view. "Be right back."
"Harry?"
Susan began, her voice worried.
"I saw Alien. I'm not Tom Skerritt."
I winked at Susan, picked up the duck, and entered the air duct, moving as quietly as I could. Evidently, it was very quiet. The duct ran straight, grates opening into utility rooms every 15 or 20 feet. I had gone past 3 of the grates when I heard voices.
"This isn't according to the deal," came Marcone's voice.
It had the scratchy edges of a radio transmission to it. Anna Valmont's smooth British accent answered it from the other side of the next grate.
"Neither was an early rendezvous. I don't like it when a buyer changes the plan."
A radio clicked. Marcone's voice came through it, smooth and calm.
"I assure you that I have no interest in breaking faith with your organization. It isn't good business."
"When I have confirmation of the transfer of funds, you'll get the article, not a second before."
"My factor in Zurich."
"Do you think I'm an idiot? This job has already cost us more than any of us bargained for. Clear off the bloody radio and contact me when you have something worth saying, or I'll destroy the bloody thing and leave."
"Wait," Marcone said. There was tension in his voice. "You can't..."
"Can't I?" Valmont answered. "Don't fuck with me, Yank. And add another million to the bill for telling me my job. I'm calling off the deal if the money isn't there in 10 minutes. Out."
I came up to the grate and found it sitting not quite squarely in its frame. Valmont must have entered the hotel and moved around through the air shafts. I peered out through the grate. Valmont had set up in a storage room of some kind. The only light in the room was a dim green shimmer that rose up from what must have been a palm-top computer. Valmont muttered something to herself beneath her breath, her eyes on the screen. She was wearing a lot of tight-fitting black clothing and a black baseball cap. She wasn't wearing my coat, damn it, but I guess I couldn't have expected to find everything wrapped up in a nice package. I checked the duck, setting it down, facing toward me. It immediately walked in a little circle and pointed toward Anna Valmont. The thief paced the room like a restless cat, eyes on the palm top. My eyes adjusted to the dimness over the course of a few minutes of waiting, and I saw that Valmont was pacing back and forth around a tube with a carrying strap. The tube wasn't more than 5 or 6 feet from me. I watched Valmont pace until her expression and steps froze, eyes locking hard on the palm top. "Great Jupiter's balls," she said quietly. "He paid it." "Now or never." I put my hands on the grate and pushed it as gently as I could. It slid soundlessly from the wall, and I set it to one side. Valmont was focused entirely on her little computer. If the prospect of payment distracted Valmont for a moment more, I'd be able to slip away with the shroud, which would be very James Bond of me. Hopefully the tuxedo would help out with that. I needed only a few seconds to creep out, nip the shroud, and get back into the vents. I almost died when Valmont's radio crackled again and Marcone's voice said, "There, as agreed, plus your additional fee. Will that be sufficient?" "Quite. You will find your merchandise in a storage closet in the basement." Marcone's voice gained an edge. "Please be more specific." I slipped out of the vents, thinking silent thoughts. A long stretch put my fingertips on the tube's carrying strap. "If you wish," Valmont replied. "The article is in a locked room in a courier's tube. The tube itself is outfitted with an incendiary. A radio transmitter in my possession has the capacity to disarm or to trigger the device. Once I am safely on my way from the city, I will disarm the device and notify you via telephone. Until that time, I suggest you do not try to open it." I jerked my fingers away from the tube. "Again, you have altered our agreement," Marcone said. He said it in a voice as smooth and cold as the inside wall of a refrigerator. "It does seem to be a seller's market,"